Good morning, 8:38, Finger Lakes Morning News. Time to get healthy with Finger Lakes Health. We're Zooming with Laura Turbide. Good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
We're going to talk in a moment about stroke care and signs and symptoms and rehab. First, it's interesting how quickly we went from people desperately searching for vaccine clinics to vaccine clinics desperately searching for people.
It is. Remember at one point I said, I think we're going to see some accessibility and availability open up. So we're obviously grateful that we did. We've got actually a clinic this week. So go on our website if you are still looking for a vaccine for yourself, for someone you love. We know there had been some of the people who maybe been hanging back a little bit, saying like, I'm gonna wait a little bit and get a little more information. Well, as more and more information has come out, we know more and more how safe the vaccines have been. And we know that we're actually be able to we're bringing down hospitalizations, we're bringing down the real acute illnesses that have been obviously occurring because we've had an increase in vaccinations. So we are still out there beating the drum and encouraging people to do what they can to protect themselves and their community. So
I apologize if I've asked this before, but I know we're getting into our spring and summer season for 5Ks and things. Any word on any of the various Finger Lakes Health events for this year of that nature?
Thank you for asking. Indeed, we are thrilled that we're going to be offering our Cubby Chase is likely going to be a hybrid event, part virtual and part real life running. We actually already on run sign up, you can go ahead and register now. So we already have our first registrants for that. We also have set some dates and are looking forward to Heels Up, and we imagine doing it in a very similar way. We also are going to announce another event. I'll probably wait for the details, but it's for those people who like to golf out there. So we've got a couple great ways to get healthy, support Finger Lakes Health. Of course, the 5K Cubby Chase is the end of July. We'll be on it same date always that last Saturday in July, and we'll support the Jim Dooley Child Care Center here and the Early Learning Center. We love that project. We're raising money for a toddler playground to complement that other playground that we just built because the little ones want to play too, and we look forward to what will be happening at the to support the homestead this year for Heels Up and as we get a little later in the year. And our golfers will be able to support cardiac rehab programs at Geneva General Hospital and Soldiers and Sailors. So more to come as we unveil those details.
All right.
Thanks for asking.
That sounds good. Now, I see Sarah Clayson on Zoom. Is Dr. Talbot there as well?
Good morning. Yes, we're both here.
You're both together. Okay, great. So we're going to talk about the stroke program. Let's start with our definition. What is a stroke? And then what is colloquially, nice try on that word, colloquially referred to as a mini stroke?
Well, Ted, I think maybe for the audience, we used to use the acronym FAST. In reality, that was false, but I guess FAST sounds better. And F being, facial droop, A, arm weakness, the L is, leg weakness as well. The S, speech, and then T, time, very timely to call 911. We've transitioned to actually B, FAST. So the B is balance and the E is eyes, loss of vision. And those two symptoms are more strokes in the back of the brain, and then the FAST symptoms are strokes in the front of the brain. But that acronym sums up, something good for the community to think about for themselves and their loved ones, and seeking timely care.
And then, what is it that's called a mini stroke? And then, what's the difference?
Well, a mini stroke is really the same, pathophysiology as a stroke. It's just typically affecting a smaller portion of the brain, and then the definition that the symptoms resolve within a period of time, usually within 24 hours. But the mechanism and the reasons for having a mini stroke are really identical to having a what we would consider a stroke. And so we want to do everything we can to identify and then minimize those risk factors.
So Sarah is the coordinator of the stroke program at Finger Lakes Health. So just we'll go into some of the detail, but give us kind of an overview of the program itself. You're a Joint Commission Certified Advanced Primary Stroke Center, also a New York State Department of Health Primary Stroke Center, and you've been given numerous awards, so congratulations on that, and just give us an overview of what the program's all about.
Thank you, yes, and we are very proud. Our team has done an amazing job striving for the best stroke care that you can possibly receive. We receive a lot of awards from the Joint Commission and the Department of Health in New York State for the best care that we've been given. And some of those awards include what we call door to needle time. So notifying EMS, getting to the emergency department as soon as you can, so we can give you Alteplase, which is a medication that could break up blood clots in the brain. And really, we've strived to be the best that we can be, and our door to needle times are amazing. So we're really proud of our team. So that is part of our stroke team. And we have been collaborating with Strong, and some of those collaborations include taking our patients that have those blood clots, getting them their medication, and moving them to Strong for neurovascular interventions.
Now, I know one of those keys, you talked about that quick turnaround time. One of the keys is being aware of the signs of stroke in others, because very often the patient might not be able to speak. I remember there was a very good public service announcement on TV a few years back where the person is saying, I'm having a stroke, only they're not actually saying it because they can't speak.
That is correct. And, you know, that's why we strive to educate the students in our community, the younger population, the kids that might be living with older adults or grandparents, for those BFAST acronyms that Dr. Talbot was just talking about. Those subtle signs and symptoms of a stroke that a child can even recognize. Something's wrong with grandma. She's not talking right. And just having them know to call 911 so we can get them the care that they need.
So Dr. Talbot, when that patient comes in, what's the first thing you look at, and what do you do to try to get them treatment and relief, hopefully as quickly as possible?
Well, typically, Ted, if we receive notification from EMS, we are essentially at the bedside as they roll through the door. And the most important first step is getting them over and getting, you know, a CT scan of their brain, you know, to ensure that there's no bleeding. Because as you alluded to earlier, there are really two types of strokes, ischemic strokes, which are, you know, blockages in the vessels, and then bleeding type strokes, which are managed much differently. After getting them back from CT and having discussions with the family and the patients, we try to identify the time of onset of symptoms. So that's incredibly important as well, as that many of the treatments we're able to provide depend on a very accurate time of onset. And so taking all of that into account, doing a very good history and physical exam, and you know, checking blood work and blood sugars, we're able to identify which treatments are best for which specific patients. As Sarah alluded to, there are some patients that you know, are amenable to what we call endovascular therapy at our comprehensive stroke partner, which is at the university. And so it's really a team you know, that provides this care.
Is the blood vessel damage reversible from a stroke, or are you simply trying to treat and then rehab that patient?
So interesting you ask. There is something called a penumbra, and that's, you know, potentially it's the area of the brain tissue, if I could describe it that way, that potentially is salvageable. And so based on the different imaging techniques that we do here locally and at the university, we're able to determine which patients would be best amenable for either care that we can provide through an IV, or care that needs to be done, you know, interventionally through you know, going up and either, you know, stenting or breaking up a clot.
How much do we know about the causes? Is there any hereditary factor, diet, and things? How much do we know?
So the when we think of stroke risk factors, you know, and there are many, we really think of things like diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking, certainly with certain types of other vascular diseases, there can be hereditary causes. But the ones that I mentioned are the ones that we really, you know, those are modifiable risk factors, as we say, and those are the ones that we try to, you know, we try to treat in those patients that are admitted to the hospital so that they don't have a second stroke.
If you go to the website, by the way, flhealth.org, under services, you can read about the stroke care program. Let's talk about what happens afterwards, Sarah, in terms of rehab. You've got the swing bed program that we've talked about in other segments, and a lot of different ways that you can help almost immediately getting that patient back to full functioning.
Yeah, so our stroke unit is actually 2 West within our hospital, And that unit is really focused on patients working with PT, OT, occupational therapy, and physical therapy to help them rehab. We have an amazing speech therapist team that works with them as well. So there's a great rehab coordination, and our goal is to obviously get these patients back home. In the event that they cannot go home, we have different levels of care that they can go to depending on their services that are needed, some of which are including the swing bed, which is in Penyon. And that is really focused on that bridge between the hospital setting and then hopefully them going home. When patients transition to home, that doesn't necessarily mean that therapy needs to completely stop. They can continue rehab services in an outpatient setting. We also are starting back up our stroke support group. That's going to be held in the Guernsey Rehab Unit with the COVID precautions. Things were put on hiatus, so to speak, with our support groups, but we're restarting those. So we have a lot of options for our patients to receive services after they transition to home as well.
By the way, the next stroke support group is next Tuesday, the 11th. That's from 3 to 4 at Guernsey Rehab. And then also they have the free blood pressure screening before that from 1 to 3. We just got that and just put it up on our community calendar at FingerLakesDailyNews.com. When someone has a stroke, how often does it reoccur? What's the likelihood of having a second or more after the first one?
Well, Ted, there certainly is, you know, having a stroke, when we talk about risk factors, that's actually one of the most, you know, telling, you know, signs that a patient may have, you know, another stroke. I can get back with you on the actual percentage. I don't have it right in front of me, but certainly that's the reason that we try to minimize all of those other modifiable risk factors that we talked about.
And the reason we try to go so quickly, and not only does the acronym work well for the symptoms in terms of be fast, but we've often talked for years about time lost is brain loss potentially. And I think a lot of people don't realize that stroke is the number one reason for disability in the United States. So there is some real importance to this time that Dr. Talbot talked about, how critical it is for people to be able to recognize the symptoms, know that time in terms of time of onset. And it just opens up so many more options for us in terms of how we can provide the right appropriate clinical care if people have that information. But also, I think we all as human beings have this tendency to kind of want to linger back, like, I don't know, should I call? Obviously, does some of the education that's happening hopefully means the people around you will see those symptoms and signs and call 911. But I think it is certainly critical that we don't hesitate on this. You know what? The best thing that could happen is you have a question, you show up in the ER, and if you're not having a stroke, no problem. We'll make sure you get home with no issue. But if you have any question that you're having a stroke, we really want to avoid that sort of, I guess I would say, the time of that hesitancy. I don't know if you, Dr. Talbot and Dr. Gleason agree.
Absolutely, Laura. We, I think in a different forum during when we were in the middle of really our COVID surge, we spoke to, you know, let us determine whether it's an emergency or not. And, you know, that's why we are here. Nobody should ever feel bashful or shy, you know, to come to the emergency department. It's our job to determine what is and what is not a true, you know, emergent medical condition.
And as Dr. Talbot talked about with the be fast piece, some of those subtle symptoms of the balance and the dizziness or the eye, the gaze disturbances, those are things that patients tend to brush off. Oh, I'm just feeling a little woozy today. So really any kind of those symptoms, don't take them lightly. They may not be a true facial droop or arm weakness or slurred speech. But if there's balance issues or eye disturbances, it's really important to come to the emergency department to be checked out.
Learn more about the program at flhealth.org under services. You'll see everything about stroke care that we talked about. There's also a video you can watch. And I should have introduced Sarah as doctor as well. Dr. Matthew Talbot, who's an MD, and Dr. Sarah Clayson, who's a PhD. Thanks to you both for your time. We appreciate the update.
Thank you, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
And May is Stroke Awareness Month. Laura, thank you as always. And we'll talk again soon.
Take care. Talk to you soon.